This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and another ex-prisoner of war story today, told in a variety of ways. What B-24 ball turret gunner Ed Krominga wrote down about his experiences years ago, what is still fresh in his memory today, and in a moment, what his wife of 73 years, Dorothy, has to say about the first of those 73. If you go to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, you'll find a photo of the Kromingas as newlyweds, as well as a current photo of the pair standing in the front yard of their home in Hollister, California, where underneath the stars and stripes flies another flag with the POW/MIA insignia and the words, "You are not forgotten." That flag holds special significance, as we'll hear from Dorothy, but if you've got a marriage that's lasted 73 years and counting, there must have been a pretty powerful first impression, right? Well, yes, Dorothy says, but not exactly the kind of impression you might expect.
Well, I really didn't like him very much.
You didn't?
Mm-mm.
Why not?
I don't know. A little cocky, maybe.
Well, I'm sure you broke him with that, right?
Really, it didn't take me long.
Where was it you guys met?
My brother dated a young lady that he liked very much, and they broke up, and then she was getting married to their best friend. It's his cousin that my brother was going with, and of course we were good friends, so we were invited to the shower. That's where I met this gentleman, and that's when I didn't like him.
Uh-huh.
But it took me a few months, and I liked him.
What changed?
I could see what kind of a person he really was, and I liked it. He wasn't one of these aggressive people. I just knew he came from a good family, German family. And that's what I was, German family.
Yeah.
So from there on, we just hit it off. It was a great life from there on.
Were you at all hesitant to marry this guy, knowing that he was going to be going overseas and risking his life?
Took me a while to considering that. But I didn't want to lose him either. So I decided to go ahead with it, get married. He gave me his wings. That took care of that. I went to Charleston, South Carolina, where he and his crew were stationed. My sister went with me, and we had a military wedding. All the crew was there, and I was found out in September that I was actually pregnant, and I thank God for that. And then in Armistice Day, that day, he was shot down, and then I was more thankful that I was pregnant.
Explain that for me. Do you mean so you would have a piece of him no matter what?
I guess that was my thing that... It was a terrible blow, of course, but I just was thankful that I would have that part of him. So as soon as I knew, I told him, and then, of course, he knew it, that we were going to have a baby.
You wrote him a letter?
Yes.
Right. So he knew that before he was shot down?
Just before he was shot down. Mm-hmm. So that was September, then he was shot down on 11th of November.
And how did you find out that he'd been shot down?
His mother and dad got the telegram. I didn't get it. And of course, it was wartime and papers, you know how that goes.
It hadn't caught up to the Air Corps yet that he was married.
That was fine. And Mother and Dad didn't tell me right away. Mother and Dad Krominga didn't tell me right away because they knew I was pregnant. They didn't want me to know that. Well, I guess then they talked to their attorney, and he said, "No, you must tell her." So then it was in the middle of December that they finally told me. And then on New Year's Day, we were all together at his family's farm for New Year's. And we got a telegram that he was a prisoner of war. So that lifted our spirit a little bit.
Because until that point...
We didn't know.
So it's just as possible that he's dead.
That's right.
How did you keep from being consumed by that fear or concern?
I think I was more than I... You know, when you're young, it's different. I think back now and I thought, how did I handle that? But I remember now that if I ever prayed, I prayed then. Now I'll probably get emotional. But... He came home, and let's see, we never heard from him again until he called me from Missouri. There were 21 days coming after he was liberated, and you ask one of the questions to him about he lost a lot of weight, and he had, but I wasn't aware of it, because when he came home, he was a pudgy little guy, because they had fed them so much on the ship coming over. They were... They were in a storms on the water coming over. And anyhow, he said they lost quite a few of the guys because they just wouldn't listen. They ate way too much, and that was a tragedy. Mm. But anyhow.
So you recognized him fine because all the weight he lost, he put back on the ship.
Right. But then he lost it all again. It didn't take him long to, because food just didn't have anything. He just didn't like food, no kind of food.
So the whole time that he was a prisoner, you never heard from him?
No postcard, nothing? No, nothing.
And he didn't receive anything from you, even though I'm sure you wrote?
Oh, yeah, I did. And then Bruce Key, this gentleman here, he took care of all the belongings that the crew had left behind. And
so that was a gentleman who was supposed to be on the mission?
But didn't go that day.
But didn't go. Mm-hmm. So what did he do?
He sent everything. Ed's Christmas package that was pulverized by that time.
That you had sent there.
Yeah, sent to Ed, yeah.
Yeah.
And all the mail, all the pictures out of his billfold that he thought he should say have. He took all his girlfriends out, of course.
Likely story.
He made a big joke of that. Uh-huh. But anyhow, that was wonderful, have that all sent back.
What about the day-to-day? I mean, we have two children, so I know what it's like. I know what pregnancy does to a woman and the roller coaster you're on to begin with. And then you've got this added dynamic of not knowing if your husband's coming home or not. How torturous were those months for you?
I had a lot of sleepless nights, lots of them, but I was stayed with my parents. I went back home. And I have a big family, a family of eight, my parents, of course, and they all stood behind me, and they just think the world of him. I said they thought more of him than he did of the poor thing. But he's always been a special person in our family.
Were there days where you didn't think he would be coming home?
I really didn't. I had really given up. Mm-hmm. But then I had more hope after we got the telegram that he was a prisoner. But you heard so much about what was going on with the prisoners that you had hope, but you didn't have hope. Mm-hmm. So I know I spent a lot of awake nights and walking the floor nights and listening to everything I could on our battery radio, you know, how that is. And then I get a call from Missouri. Here he is. Didn't hear from him all that time. We knew he must be liberated if he's a prisoner. We know he must be coming home, but you still don't hear anything. But he's here. He's supposed to call from New York, but they couldn't.
So that had to be a little nerve-wracking because you're doing the math saying, okay, mm-hmm. Now I've got this baby. Where's my husband? I know he's been liberated. Why haven't I heard from him?
Somebody, anyhow.
Yeah.
And I didn't. But I don't think I can ever explain the feeling when he called that day from Missouri. I just don't think I could ever get over that feeling.
Do you remember what he said?
You know, I just know he called. It's unbelievable. You're so emotional. I honest to goodness can't tell you.
It was a dream come true, though.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. That was exactly what it was.
So then you said, when are you actually going to come home, right?
He said, I think tomorrow. I think he said he'd be home tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
But that was the 7th of June. Our wedding anniversary, first wedding anniversary was on the 8th. And would you believe that it must have been about midnight, colder than Dickens in Iowa at that time. I thought it was. And he knocked on my bedroom window. Or there was a knock on my bedroom window. And the funny part of it was I had long blonde hair in those days. And mother had, I'd shampooed my hair because I knew he was coming home. And she wrapped my long hair in dad's stockings, white work stockings. So I was beautiful. And at the time, after I had my baby, I had acquired eczema on my hands years before, and they had cured it, they thought, but having my pregnancy, it came back. So mother had doctored my hands and put my hands in sugar bags. Back and then you bought your sugar in sugar bags. So my stockings and my hair, sugar bags on my hands, and I had to go to the door to greet my husband.
On your first anniversary?
On our first anniversary. So he was home on our first anniversary.
Well, you just had to make it unforgettable for him, right?
I did. I tried. I tried.
With sugar bags on your hands.
Oh, Lord. I tell you.
And stockings.
In those times, you didn't have a camera ever, you know, like you do now. And I just wish that somebody could really take a picture so I could prove what I must have looked like.
That's all right. They say radio is theater of the mind, and you're painting a real captivating picture right now. And, you know, we talked about the fact that he didn't know if you guys had a boy or a girl. Mm-hmm. Did you wake the baby to see him, or did you wait till the morning?
No. She was in her crib right beside my bed, and I always see him as long as I live. Him standing there looking at her. That's what he did.
Quite adoringly, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. And he said, it's a girl.
Yeah, what a way to find out. So did he tell you much about what he'd been through?
No, not for a long time. No, as a matter of fact, he talked very little about it. Very, very little. And he wasn't well for a long time. He had some kind of, it wasn't malaria. No, he didn't have that. And we finally found a doctor that diagnosed it. But every 3 months he'd become very ill. I don't want to even describe it. It was terrible.
For how long?
He did that until, well, our children, these two, our other two children. Well, I guess I should go back to Manya. No, not yet. Yes, I should. Our first little girl was named Manya. And she and I, after he was home, 51, she died. She and I were in an accident, and we lost her. But after that, then we had these children. We had Amaya first. Then we had Brad. I didn't think we'd ever have any children, and we did, thank God. So it must have been, oh, dear.
This was an illness as a result of his malnutrition as a prisoner that just kept coming back over and over.
But we just had to find a doctor that could diagnose it, which he did. And they made a serum from cultures from him and injected it again every so often.
Self-inoculated.
Yep, right. Uh-huh. And but he went through a terrible time for, must have been about 55 that he finally started to come out of that.
Hmm. Is there a part of his story, what he went through, what happened to him, what he survived, that has always impressed or amazed you? Or that you say, boy, how did that happen? How did he do that?
I think the only thing, he's a very strong faith. He has a faith that Gibraltar. He just... I wish I had all of it, but I think I had a part of it. But he really is a faithful, just a faith of, I just can't imagine.
So you think that's what got him through that?
And to this day, that's top priority with him. He's just been a wonderful dad, a wonderful husband. And I know my family just really, dearly loved him.
73 years of marriage already. Mm-hmm. What's your secret?
I think the biggest thing is caring. And communications. The older I get, the less communication I see among people. And if you don't have that, you just can't tolerate what goes on around you. You've got to talk and work things out. And I can't honestly say we had plenty of disagreements because I'm strong and he's the one that smiled at me. But I always won.
Naturally.
His thinking, when you need to work something out, he's the one that can do it.
Mm-hmm.
He has the knowledge and the faith to do it. He does it. He never changes.
I don't want to forget to ask you about that flag, that POW/MIA flag flying so prominently right in front of your home. Why is it so important to you and Ed to have that there for everybody to see?
He's wanted it for a long time. We were never really sure if we could fly it or not, but he wanted it because in memory of his crew. He loved his crew, and they all loved each other. They were great. Bunch of guys. Matter of fact, Pete Merle, this little guy here, a little Italian, he was our best man in our wedding. And we spent a lot of time with he and his wife. He wanted it because he wanted it a memorial for his crew and those that didn't come home. Mm-hmm. And what they went. Because it was for POW as well as the ones that were still missing. We still consider them missing, you know, in action, which they are.
Yeah.
Because they, to our knowledge, they were never recovered. The pilot, Jay, we were in contact with his mother a lot, and he never came home. So from what Ed had told us in the beginning, that the front of the plane was all gone, he knew that everybody up there was gone. Mm-hmm. They couldn't have survived that, the way it was blown apart.
Mm.
That was the one part he did tell us. He knew they wouldn't be coming home.
Is there anything else that you want to say about him or...
Ed?
Yeah, or about what you went through as a wife and a mother with a husband... Was a prisoner across the world?
Well, everybody that had a husband and didn't have a husband like I had, because there just aren't very many like him. I think more about how did I do it now than I did back then. When you're young, I think you can handle things a little bit better. I know it was terribly hard. And when I knew people that lost their husbands or sons or daughters, I suffered for them. Because I knew it was tough because what I'd gone through, but I still wouldn't trade him off.
What do you think is the biggest difference between America today and America back then?
Oh, that's a big question. I am so upset about all of this world. I just don't believe there's what's going on, what's happened. Generations through our lifetime have changed so drastically. And I can remember my mother saying, oh my. I thought, oh, what would she say today? I think about that. And I thought, oh, mother, what's so bad about it, you know?
Do you think there's something we could learn from how America responded to that situation during World War II that would help us out today?
Well, I would hope so. But people are so divided today. They don't listen. I think they want too much. Don't give enough. I don't know. I'm past knowing, I think. I just don't understand it.
Well, maybe what you just shared, that it is better to give than to receive, and the reality that putting that into practice often allows us to end up receiving more than we even give. Maybe that's something some of us listening to you today were supposed to hear. That's Dorothy Krominga, and I'm so thankful we got to add her perspective to the mix today. Don't forget to pull up the photos of Ed and Dorothy at hometownheroesradio.com and the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And we're not quite done yet. I mentioned this weekend marks the 10th anniversary of the very first episode of this program. We'll go back for a few highlights from that when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this. Remember when the bank gave you free checking and savings accounts? Even making money for you when you kept your dollars there? Paul Leffler here to say I've recaptured those days, and you can too with EECU. It's not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that just keeps growing and growing. The newest branch is in Tulare, and nearly a quarter million EECU members represent 10 different California counties. As little as $250 in a savings account earns you dividends. And access is so easy. 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And I haven't even told you what I love most about EECU, the credit union's support of causes up and down our area, like Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 800 veterans have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free because of the leadership and financial support of EECU. Ready to join the team yet? Call 1-800-538-3328.